Welcome to Infinity Nerd, your podcast for all things nerdy in film or TV. I'm your host, Mike Smith, and joining me today is my wife, Nikki Smith.
Hi.
My cousin, Ashton Haddon.
Hi.
And my sister-in-law, Marissa Carter.
What's up?
And today we're here to discuss the latest from Marvel Studios, Captain Marvel. This will be spoiler-free for the first part, and then we're going to be opening it up to spoilers for the last half. So if you want to go into the movie without spoilers, we'll let you know when that will begin, so you'll know when it's time to exit, and then you can go see the movie and then come back to finish the episode. So let's go ahead and jump into our spoiler-free section. So the first thing I want to talk about is general impressions. So what was your general impressions of the movie?
I was really excited for it at first.
Okay, what about you?
I don't know. I think it's really great that they're doing a movie based off of a woman superhero.
At first, I wasn't too excited. I didn't think there was much hype. I don't even think I saw the preview at all before going into the theater, but it didn't disappoint at all.
It was really good. I thought it was a very good, strong start for a really fresh character for the MCU that I'm excited to see what they do with her. How did you guys feel about the plot, again, without giving any spoilers away? Did you feel like the plot pacing was good? Do you feel like the plot was coherent enough? It wasn't too overly complex? Was it too simple? What did you guys think?
I think it gave exactly what it needed to. I think everyone had a good idea where it was leading, and they gave us that, but not in a too obvious way. They kind of played with it a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Ashton?
I completely agree. I think that, like she said, it was very... I feel like it started out very slow, but then it continued to get better as the film went on.
Yeah. So for me, I love that it was set in the 90s. We get to see a very early and young Nick Fury, who's very different than the Nick Fury that we've come to know and love. And we get to kind of see him with fresh eyes for the first time experiencing something that's changing his life in the course of cinematic history for that matter. So as far as the acting goes, we'll hold off on Brie Larson first, because we all know that's going to be a big topic. But what did you think of the rest of the cast? Was there anyone specific that you really liked their character, or the acting in general?
I feel like they could have played up Coulson more.
I agree with that. I feel like Coulson was really underutilized. Like, his scenes were really great with him in it, but I do feel like they really put Nick Fury as the main agent. And I feel like it'd been cool to see a little bit more of Coulson. What about you?
I really liked how they digitized them to make them look younger, and you can actually see that they looked younger. They did a really good job of
it. Yeah, it was seamless. I couldn't, if I hadn't known, I would have thought this was them at their current age. What about you?
Actually, one of my favorite characters wasn't even a person. I think the cat in the movie was one of the ones that stole it for me.
Yeah. So as far as acting with Brie Larson, by the way, I do want to say that Ben Mendelsohn, I believe I say saying his name right, he played as Talos, and I thought he did a stellar job, as he does in all of his films that I've seen. He was a kind of a he stole the scenes for me a lot of times. But anyway, so on to before we get to Brie Larson, actually, I do have one more person. Samuel L. Jackson. I think this is the most fun that Samuel L. Jackson has had in a film. Because not only that is he front and center, he got to be fun. He didn't have to be serious all the time. He had a lot of comedic moments that weren't... Some that were meant to be and some that weren't meant to be. And you got to see him kind of not be in charge. He was the agent kind of towards the bottom of the totem pole versus being on top, which is very different.
Right, great.
How did everyone feel about Brie Larson as Carol Danvers?
I think she did an amazing job. I mean, she's a great actor, as is. I feel like she really just made the character.
Anyone else want to talk about?
I agree. I thought she was going to have more of the comedic role instead of Samuel L. Jackson, actually. But she actually took her role and made it very serious. And she kind of made herself the foundation of what Marvel was built on.
Yeah, I think that for Brie Larson, I think that she... When she had to do her snarky comedic moments, it wasn't so much like, oh, I have to be funny in the scene. She's just supposed to be snarky or a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for?
She's
sassy. Sassy, yeah, a little bit of sassy, but not where she's trying to be funny. She's just like, I'm funny for my amusement, not yours. And I like that about her. What about you, Nikki?
I really enjoyed her. As far as with Brie, I haven't seen her really in anything else, so I didn't really know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as with the way that she portrayed her character, and she was strong. She came off as a strong woman and someone to like look up to.
Yeah, which is something that's been really sorely lacking in the Marvel Cinematic Universe as late, because this is the 21st film for Marvel Studios. And we've had some strong female characters, Black Widow, Scarlet Witch, even Maria Hill, you know, played by Robin Sparkles of Himyam fame. But as far as front and center, 100%, it's been pretty much Black Widow or nothing.
Right.
And we're supposed to be getting a movie of her next year is what it's kind of rumored to be, that they're going to be filming it, and we might be seeing it by the end of next year, which will be interesting, especially when you compare someone that's not powered to someone that's completely super powerful like this.
Growing up, we didn't really have a woman female to look up to as a superhero. I mean, yeah, we had Wonder Woman. That was kind of an old thing, but they never really brought it out into film. They never really made it a big deal. And, you know, when this movie came out, it kind of brought that back open. Yes, we had that with DC, but I mean, as far as, you know, a role model for women, we never really had that before.
Especially for modern audiences, I think. Because Wonder Woman is more of like a classic audience, where this is very much for the girls of today.
Right.
I would say
it completely sparked something new.
Yeah,
I agree 100%. When I was a kid, I mean, yeah, everyone knew about Wonder Woman, but it was kind of like a joke, like, oh, Wonder Woman was Batman's girlfriend. You know, she was always kind of second hand compared to Batman and to Superman. And now for her to be standing on her own and to be as strong as she is, I think amazing. As well as the fact that it wasn't surrounded around a love story. Like, I think a lot of women's lead roles are. She did her own thing and she did it independently.
Especially in superhero films. Yeah, yeah. Most of the time lead females are romantic. I mean, let's look at the movie franchises so far from MCU specifically. We have, from Iron Man, we had Pepper Potts, right? And then in Thor, we had Natalie Portman's Jane Foster. And then in Captain America, we had Peggy Carter and then Sharon Carter for the other two films. Just going with the main trio, I mean, obviously you can go with Gamora and Peter Quill from Guardians as well. And you can go to Ant-Man and look at some of those.
And Hulk and Natasha.
Hulk and Natasha, even just in the Avengers crossovers as it is. So having it where it's a movie that does not try to say we have to sell a love story to tell the story. We don't have to cater to that. And another thing too about the movie, I want to say again, this is more towards general impressions, is they didn't over sexualize her in any way, shape, or form.
Not at all.
And without spoiling anything, they did have a reoccurring theme of giving her power, and I don't mean that as in powers, but as in female power or human power instead. It wasn't about female empowerment, it was just about giving her power to stand on her own and be included where she wants to be, and I felt like she did great with that. She was able to handle the serious scenes really well, the snarky scenes really well. She was a fun, light character, and with the power set that she has, which makes her arguably the most powerful Avenger character, I'm very excited to see her in Endgame. As far as the score, we all kind of listened to the soundtrack earlier today when we were playing Marvel Munchkin. When you watched the movie, so before even listening to the soundtrack today, was there any moments where you're like, oh, the soundtrack is good? And I'm not talking about the 90s stuff. We'll talk about that in a second. But just the overall orchestral score. Or did nothing really stand out for you guys?
I thought it would be more light.
There are some movies where I'm watching it. And this happened to me when I've been rewatching movies of MCU. I'm in The Hulk or Iron Man. And all of a sudden, something will come on. I'm like, oh, like the song. You think about the song as it comes on. You're like, oh, this is a good song. I couldn't pinpoint anything from Captain Marvel specifically, except for the 90s throwback songs.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Now, when I listened to the soundtrack today with you guys, I was kind of listening in and out as we were playing a game, and it's done by Pinar Toprak, I believe. I'm saying that right? He's the composer. And some of the songs, when you listen to them separately, it's good. But I mean, sometimes when you're in a movie, you're so focused on what's going on, you're not really paying attention to the score. So I think this is going to be one of the soundtracks that the more you listen to it or the more you watch the movie, you're going to start hearing it. It's going to get stuck in your head a little bit more, because I thought it was actually pretty decent. But overall, not something that's grabbing your attention.
I agree.
It's not a standalone like you would get with like the Dark Knight trilogy.
Yeah, where the music just...
Or Star Wars.
Yeah, Hans Zimmer or John Williams. As far as going into now the 90s music, and we won't talk about the throwbacks or individual songs. So with the 90s music, which I thought they had a great selection, we'll probably talk a little bit more about that later in the spoiler thing, because I don't want to spoil any specific songs. Because that's always kind of a nice thing when you know it's a movie set in the past, and you know they're going to use those songs that you grew up with. I thought it was really well done. They picked a lot of good songs, and again, we'll go into that a little bit later. But let's go ahead and talk about the Skrulls for a minute. They are the new race of aliens that we haven't encountered before, to my knowledge, within the MCU. And they're shapeshifters, which could really lead into a lot of really great story lines and stories that can be spread out throughout the next three phases if they wanted to do a secret invasion storyline from the comics. Which they've been, I've heard that they're not planning to, but that could be that they're trying to throw us off because it would be a secret invasion because they wouldn't tell us they've been invading the whole time. So that'd be kind of Marvel. I could see Marvel doing something like that. What did you guys think of the Skrulls and the way they looked and the race as a whole? Again, with no spoilers.
I think they looked awesome. They totally stayed true to the comics from what I've seen. And I think they did a really amazing job on what they had looked like and what they had planned for it.
I agree. What did you say about their chins?
They have Thanos chins.
They really do. They really do. What about you, Nikki?
I think they did a really good job when they would shift into a different person or when they were...
Like the special effects when they were doing the morphing or whatever?
Right. It looked really good. You couldn't tell like there was any really...
It was like... It wasn't CG. Right. It didn't look fake. Right. It looked like it could be organic. What about you, Marissa?
I like the way that they played it into the story. Mm-hmm. Not only did it give it some of the comedic relief that we were kind of lacking from more of the main characters, but it all fit in perfectly. It was explained in the end. It all just really finished out the story.
Yeah, no, I fully agree. I think that they made... And there was actually... I don't know if you guys thought this too, but I was thinking during the movie that a lot of the Skrulls look different from each other. It's very easy for them when they're doing these makeup things to make everyone look the same. Like the Chitauri. I know those were all digitized. That's the one from Avengers, the Battle of New York. But they just make one model and they can reuse it. But even if they had... With these, with prosthetics or visual effects, I think they did a combination. I think they made each one look somewhat different. And the Skrulls themselves actually had some humor within themselves. Not even like main characters, just side stuff that would happen. I thought they were going to be a lot more menacing. But I actually really like their introduction into the MCU because it shows multiple sides to them. As far as the special effects, we kind of talked, or Nikki kind of touched on this before. The special effects, we talked about the digitization of younger appearances for both Coulson and Fury, which again was just...
Fantastic.
Like, you can't do it better. Mm-mm. You just can't.
You can't even tell.
Yeah, you can't tell. There's like with even doing them with Lucasfilm, or not Lucasfilm, who does the Industrial Light and Magic, when they did Tarkin for Rogue One and brought him back essentially from the dead. Peter Cushing, who played as Grand Moff Tarkin in A New Hope, when they brought him back from the dead in Rogue One, they made it look really realistic for the most part. I mean, you can see some digitization, but I feel like that they've really kind of come a long way. And you were telling me earlier, Nikki, about Tron, about how it kind of started there.
Right. And how much you can actually see the digitizing on the face, and you can actually tell that they actually digitized him to make look younger. But as far as this movie, you couldn't tell at all.
Yeah. And then you were saying about Princess Leia, that they brought her back too. Young Princess Leia.
Yeah, it looked 100% like her. It was actually kind of saddening because you couldn't tell that it was fake. And with her recent passing, you know, it kind of touched a sensitive subject.
Yeah, right during the release of the film, pretty much.
Yeah.
And then as far as where they're at now, and I don't know if it's Industrial Light and Magic or ILM, as we'll reference it, who did all three Tron, Star Wars, and Captain Marvel. I'm pretty confident that it'd be Industrial Light and Magic for Captain Marvel and Star Wars, because those were purchased from Disney before Tron, or after Tron. Anyway, so moving on. So the last talking point we're going to talk about that's non-spoilers is essentially kind of the girl power behind the movie. If you guys felt, again, with no spoilers, if the themes were good, if they were over too strong, if they're too underlying, or what did you guys think? Especially being that, you know, the movie was released on National Women's Day. What did you think?
I think it was very empowering. I think she was amazing because she's a very powerful character as is, but she stood alone and she could, I don't know, she's just really powerful as is, as just her, just Carol Danvers.
As a person.
Yeah, as a person.
What about you?
I thought it was spot on. I mean, it wasn't too in your face, but at the same time, it was apparent that they were trying to make a point with it.
Yeah, not too strong, like a subtle point. What about you, Nikki?
I would agree that, you know, there was a lot of, like, independent, she was strong, didn't need romance to make the movie.
No, and that was good. Yeah, they didn't try to make it into a quote-unquote chick flick. They didn't try to make it into a guy flick. They made it into a human flick. And it's about someone discovering themselves and their limitless possibilities when they can finally be true to who they are. So with that, we're going to go ahead and close up the non-spoiler segment. So if you have not seen the movie or if you don't want spoilers, please go ahead and feel free to push pause. Come back to us, finish the episode after you've seen it, see if maybe you agree with our comments or if you don't. But you have been warned, we're now going to spoiler territory for the remainder of the episode. So the first thing we're going to talk about is plot. So as we know, it starts out with a dream that Carol is having, or as she's known at this point, Veers, which I thought was a really cool little thing, that she was having a dream about something she couldn't make sense of, and it woke her up early, so she wanted to do a sparring session, and it landed us right into the Krees and the Star Force. That she was working with Jude Law's character. I'm not going to call his character by name because I think I'm going to butcher it. So plot things that I really liked, actually even before the movie started, let's start back then. The Stan Lee tribute. What did you guys think of it?
I think it was fantastic. I think it was one of the best ways that they could have put a tribute together for Stan Lee.
Yeah, it was really well done.
Well, and it wasn't even just the beginning of the movie is, I think, one of the most important parts. You know, before the movie, you're kind of getting prepared. You're not quite into it yet. So it really was his main focus. And not just that, the way that they did it, it was almost as if they were saying that he was the hero behind Marvel. You know, instead of showing the heroes in the movies, they showed the heroes behind the movie for once.
Yeah. And then also being able to see him as a cameo. And I don't know if you guys know this, but the cameo that he had. So apparently, and I don't know this because I haven't seen the movie, there's a movie by Kevin Smith called Mallrats. And I guess Stan Lee came in and had a cameo around the 95 year or whatever. And that's what his character was, just reading that line over and over as if he's practicing. So it's actually supposed to be Stan Lee as Stan Lee. Oh, wow. So I thought that was really cool because I read about that afterwards.
Kevin Smith posted,
I think, on Twitter or something about how touching it was that his movies have been referencing other movies for years. And finally, someone else is referencing his movie. But yeah, the Stan Lee tribute at the very beginning was really touching. And we've kind of talked about outside of this whether or not they should keep it for at least a couple movies or even longer. And who knows if they're going to do that. Maybe they'll do that for like the next couple movies, like of the 2019 films, because that's like 1 year up to his death type thing, or after his death. I could see them doing something like that, especially with Avengers Endgame around the corner. And that's the end of this era, which he was a huge part of. I believe that they filmed him cameos up to Spider-Man. I'm guessing. Don't quote me. I think I read that somewhere. And after that, we probably don't have any because they haven't filmed any other movie yet.
I heard that when he got sick that they filmed a bunch together. Like, they had them planned out so that he could do them before they knew his passing was coming.
Yeah, and they may have even done some that were standalone that could fit in just about any movie. So that way they had him to pull from so they could still use Stan Lee. As far as young Nick Fury and Phil Coulson, what did you think of their character personalities now that we can kind of open up about it a little bit more with the spoilers? Like, we'll start with Nick Fury. Well, let's start with Coulson because it was a smaller role, which, again, we kind of complained that we thought that was a low point for the movie. Because Coulson's great. And to see him come back after 7 years from the films. Yes, he's been in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but 7 years that we haven't seen Coulson. And he was a really great character in the first phase. What did you guys think of his character? Not necessarily his look, but his character in the movie.
Like I said before, I think that his character could have totally been played up more. Like, he could have had more to contribute, I guess you could say.
What did you think, Nikki, about Coulson's return?
I really enjoyed seeing him. I think it was really great that it was like his first day almost. Like,
on the job?
On the job.
And, yeah.
And he ends up helping him escape when he probably didn't even know if that was something that was a good idea or not. He probably just went on, like, under his, like, gut instinct. But that was just kind of him. Like, throughout all the movies, that's him.
Put his faith in people.
Right.
He really did, yeah. I thought it was great because, you know, those of us who've watched the show, like Nikki and I, we've watched, or we're not caught up by any means, but we've watched at least the first three or four seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we've been meaning to catch up. We've got too many shows. Having, you know, see Coulson from Avengers, you know, sacrifice himself to Loki, and then come back in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and we're like, okay, they're continuing the story there, but then we can kind of go back and see him in theaters, because a lot of people haven't seen him, like I said, in about 7 years. I thought it was really great, and I thought his character was pretty true to a younger version of what Coulson would be, because like you said, he just believed in people. But as far as young Nick Fury, I'll go ahead and start with this one, and I mentioned it before. I thought he was hilarious. I thought if there was a comedic character that was really there for the comedy, aside from actually Talos, played by Ben Mendelsohn, because I thought he was really funny too.
Yeah.
But I felt like as far as the good guys, like up front, we knew who was the heroes. I thought he was just funny. I didn't expect him to be so light-hearted.
Right. Well, in all the other films, he's just so serious. He has such a serious role, and you don't get to see that side of him. You don't get to see the funny side, and even, I don't know, just his humor. You don't really get to see that all that much, but you got to see it quite a bit in this one.
Yeah.
It's really great.
Really shows you kind of who he is behind the patch, so to speak. As far as the Tesseract, I wanted to kind of touch on this at first because between the few of us here, because we all went to go see it last night, some of us were really excited when they mentioned the Tesseract, and then there was me who was like, this is not possible, because S.H.I.E.L.D. already had possession of the Tesseract.
As far as we knew.
As far as we knew, way back from Captain America, the First Avenger. And then we see it up in a space station orbiting Earth. And I've tried to piece it together myself what may have happened. So S.H.I.E.L.D. was, you know, actually Howard Stark, Tony Stark's father, found it in the ocean nearby where Steve Rogers had crashed the ship, found the Tesseract, and then we don't see it again until Avengers. The character played by Annette Bening, Mar-Vell / Dr. Wendy Lawson, she was working with S.H.I.E.L.D., so it's very easily, like, you can kind of fill it in that it's possible she had the ability and the access to steal the Tesseract, put it up in space for 6 years or however long, and then, you know, as long as S.H.I.E.L.D. got it back at the end, it's like one of those like little loopholes, like with Darth Maul. Like, as long as you kill him before A New Hope, mm-hmm. it's okay to bring him back because then you're fixing the timeline again, but you're telling a little side piece of story that you can, you know, use for story advantage.
Well, one of the parts of the Tesseract plot was with the Skrulls. Like, when they came to the Tesseract and knowing what it was, they didn't care about it. They didn't care that that's what it was, what power it had, nothing. They cared about their family.
Yeah.
And I thought that was really great to see that they had more to life than
being evil.
Being evil, taking power, and thought that was really
great. That was actually probably one of the best things about this movie was the, for me, unexpectedness of, yeah, the twist that came from, okay, so Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, she's, you know, a fighter pilot. We knew there was something with that, that she was somehow a fighter pilot, that something happened, and now she's a Kree with superpowers. And then to find out that the Kree have been pretty much using her because she's a power source and they don't know how to control her yet, so that's why she has that little chip or whatever. And then they switch it over to, oh, the Skrulls are bad, the Skrulls are bad. And then you see the flip, and you're like, oh, she's had it backwards this whole time. I didn't expect that at all. I know that Marissa said she expected Jude Law to be bad. Did you expect the Kree to be bad in general versus the Skrull, the way it was portrayed?
I didn't think anything of the Skrulls, to be honest. I just thought that they were kind of a minor character in the middle to get her to Earth, and I thought they were just kind of going to leave it at that. But mm-hmm. the fact that they had a bigger role in the end really did take me by surprise.
Yeah, what did everyone think of the cat? I just gotta ask. Did everyone like the cat? Goose. Yeah, Goose. Did you know his name was actually, I think it was Chewbacca in the comics, but they changed it to Goose of Top Gun because they were trying to go more for like the aviator flight type thing, which made more sense. What are some of your guys' favorite scenes from the movie? We already kind of mentioned that like the twist between the Kree and the Skrulls was really cool, which led to really Ben Mendelsohn always being a villain. At least in the main movies I've known him from, which is Rogue One and Ready Player One, he's the bad guy, and he plays a great villain. So coming into this movie, I thought he was just going to be the big bad. That's it. And then he turns out to be, you know, just some Skrull daddy who wants to take care of his family. So what did you guys think of, or what were some of your other favorite movies, or moments in the movie?
One of the greater ones for me was when they were showing all her almost back flashes of her life, and when she was captured and when they were bounding her down and she's fighting it, and then she ends up stating that she's human and that she's made these mistakes. She's where she just kept falling. She kept falling, but she kept getting back up.
Yeah, that was something I kept noticing as a theme.
And she ended up realizing, you know what, I'm human. that's why I keep getting back up, and we try. We when we fall, we get back up. And that's what kind of gave her power, is she realized who she was, and that's when she found herself.
I agree.
Yeah.
My name is Carol scene was a great scene.
Yeah, I actually really liked the way that they came up with Veers as her name, with the dog tags being burnt off. Because I was like, where the hell did they get the name Veers? Her name is Carol, which, I mean, I kind of get it. If you don't know who you are, you're going to have a different name. But why Veers? That's when they revealed that. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. I like that a lot. Which reminds me of how that's how Nick Fury also got the name for the Avengers. It was going to be the Protector Initiative,
I think it was. That's what it was.
And we all knew, you know, sitting there in the audience, like, oh, he's working on an early version of the Avengers. And then he sees her at the very end, her ship says Avenger. And you're like, really, she's the one who kind of set that path there, because she was his first interaction with an enhanced human being, as they like to call her, enhanced.
She really is the first Avenger.
I just think everyone keeps saying that the overall theme of the movie was feminist-based, and that's why people are having a hard time accepting it, because they feel like it's getting shoved down their throats. But I think it was more of a humility-based movie. The whole time she didn't know who she was, she didn't understand why she couldn't turn off her emotions, and why she was letting it control her, and it was because she was human, you know? It kept showing how she failed and she got up. But at the same time, not just from a human standpoint, but it showed the humility in the Skrulls. You think that they're bad guys this whole time, and in reality, they just wanted love. They just wanted their families. They just wanted a part of them that wasn't being shown. They didn't care about the Tesseract. They didn't care about the Kree and the war. They just wanted what was theirs.
No, I completely get that. I do hope there is, like, a sect out there of Krulls that are just completely evil. I'm not going to lie, because I would love to see a Secret Invasion storyline. So I think that would be really cool. So I hope there's evil Skrulls out there, but it is cool to know that they had good Skrulls. And it wasn't overly done in a fun way, but back to the feminine aspect of it. I feel like there were certainly some female empowerment moments, like where her dad was like, you can't ride the bike or whatever it was, because the go-kart, because you're a girl. And he didn't quite say it like that, but you could tell that's what was going on. Or like the Air Force trainers, they're like, oh, you can't do this, blah blah blah. And that could have been like just and then like her cockpit guy kept saying there's a reason they call it a cockpit. There's a lot of like hidden, or subtle I should say, themes of men trying to dominate women, and she kept getting back up. And so that scene that you're talking about where it showed the flashbacks and it kept going from like her standing back up for each time she fell, I thought that was spectacular. And then, you know, that's when she really got to unleash, and then when she said, you know, I've been fighting with one hand behind my back, and she released herself of that and just knocked it out.
Well, and another thing that I loved that kind of ties into all that was when, in the end, when she was trying to fight Jude Law's character, he pretty much said, prove yourself to me. And she stood up to him, and she said, I don't need to prove myself to you. You know, I've proved
I was just thinking
myself.
Yeah. No, and that, I thought that was great. And not only that, with her being as strong as she is, she has already, in my book, earned her place. Brie Larson using, you know, being the vessel. Captain Marvel already fits within the MCU as we know it, and I cannot wait to see how the puzzles come together for her. You know, kind of, we'll talk about the post-credits scene in a minute. I wanted to kind of talk about the 90s references. You know, Blockbuster, what were some other ones you guys can
Radio Shack,
payphones. Radio Shack,
payphones. Even the music. You know, no doubt, I'm Just a Girl being like the one of the final fights where she's fighting a lot of the Kree on the space station, whatever you want to call it, the lab. You know, I thought that song was chosen very specifically. I mean, as all songs are, but because it's I'm Just a Girl, and she's proving I'm just a girl, I can still kick your ass. And I thought that was great.
They paired it with an amazing scene.
Yeah, they paired it with an amazing scene. We had, some TLC, Don't Go Chasing Waterfalls.
Cool. Nirvana.
Nirvana, yeah, that was really cool. The Nine Inch Nails t-shirt she was wearing throughout most
there
of the movie.
There was style in general.
311 references in the back with the posters.
Yeah, like the style of the cars. And they had, like, Street Fighter 2, which was a big reference for me because I'm a huge Street Fighter
fan. Arcade games.
Pinball. As far as character development, do you feel like, who do you think had the most character development and who do you think could have had more?
I feel like Carol Danvers in general had a lot of character development.
Yeah, I agree. Because she basically had to rediscover who she was.
Right.
Although she never really found all of her memories. Like, I think she's got enough to piece it together, and she knew she had some bond with her friend. but...
Well, here she thought also that the scroll was evil. They capture her. She's not understanding why they're going through her memories, and she's not understanding, wait, those aren't my memories. What memories are these? These aren't mm-hmm. mine.
Well, and the Kree played into it. They told her that they're putting memories in her head that don't belong to her.
Right, and she didn't believe it. And so she thought that they were after her when all along they were trying to actually help her find, you know, that space, what was it, the space shuttle or craft in this,
yeah.
in space. And that's what they wanted all along. They didn't want to hurt her. They just wanted what was theirs. They wanted their family. And I really loved how they had to build her, she technically had to build herself back up
yeah.
to kind of find herself and
it's almost like a phoenix persona truth. Where she had to rebuild herself and she didn't even know who she was to build up to
right.
So
she kept getting bits and pieces
and just said, this is who I am, deal with it.
Honestly, I feel like each one of the characters had a lot of character development, especially like Nick Fury. He had a lot of character development, as is, because I mean, he didn't trust her at first and he gained that trust,
yeah, where he kept like messaging his boss yeah. and all that, who ended up being a Skrull. And so you're like, oh, okay, he's the bad guy of the movie. And then ended up being Jude Law, which was really cool. And he did a great job as the villain. And as a mentor side of it, too. I could have seen him being in the whole trilogy and then being the bad guy at the last part of the trilogy.
Right, it was a complete plot twist with that.
Yeah, I didn't expect that at all.
You're thinking the whole time that they're the bad guys, that the Skrull is, and that they were, I don't know. I loved that.
Yeah, I really like the throwbacks too. Did you have something you want to add for?
Well, I was gonna say even Goose had a lot of character development. Anyway.
I think he just had a lot of calories that he ate. I'm gonna go with that. One thing I did want to complain about a little bit was the fact that they said Shield when in Iron Man 1 he kept calling it Strategic Homeland, you know, whatever, and then she, you know, Pepper would be like, oh, that's a mouthful. He's like, yeah, we're working on it. And then he says Shield at the end. But in this movie they kept referencing Shield as if it's always been called that. And I get that's not a huge deal. That's a really minor complaint. And the audience knows who SHIELD is. But that was just a minor complaint on my part.
No one really pays attention as much as you do.
Yeah, I really don't. as far as, because we already kind of touched on themes. Part of the thing, just visually, her getting back up every single time, I think itself made itself into a visual theme. More so than a theme of the plot.
It was very inspirational.
Yeah. And then when she finally says, you know,
my name is Carol.
Yeah. And then she just went crazy on those ships, which was just amazing. I mean, she literally flew through a ship and boom, it's gone. she's got to be the most powerful Avenger now, I think. I don't know. I mean, there's like, I don't know, Scarlet Witch and her would be a really cool fight. Or her and Doctor Strange, I don't know. Like, just, I could picture cool stuff.
I'm very excited.
They ever do Civil War 2. They ever do Civil War 2, that would be dope.
Like, getting told, you're weak, you're weak. You can't do this, you're weak. Yeah. And then she's found her strength, and that was I loved that so much.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as the post-credit scene, where the Avengers are playing with the pager, which I even said before the film, I want to see, in the post-credit scene, the aftermath of the pager. Like, her just even getting the message and flying off, and it says, Carol Danvers or Captain Marvel will return in Avengers Endgame. And we kind of got that, with the Avengers being around the pager, and all of a sudden, it goes dead. And they're like, what's going on? And then Carol flies right in and says, where's Fury? And I think personally that's a scene taken directly out of Endgame. I do not think this is a just standalone post-credit scene. I think it's one of those post-credit scenes that they're like teasing the next movie.
Right. It's like a piece of it.
Yeah.
That scene made me even more excited to see Endgame.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait to see Carol fight Thanos. Like, that is the biggest thing I'm like looking forward to. Even more so than like the reunion of Tony Stark and Captain America again. Like, that's one of the top things up there, is just seeing her interact with this universe, because now we've gotten like Doctor Strange in there and Black Panther. Everyone's been a part of it, but now her.
Yeah, I'm excited to see how she fits in with the Avengers.
Yeah, absolutely. Anything else you guys want to add as far as critiques? Like, what are some things you guys didn't really care for in the movie, if you had to pick some?
I think the overall feel of the movie wasn't as 90s as I wanted it to be. Yeah, they showed some kind of throwback things and threw some songs in there. But if you take that out, I mean, it just didn't have the whole feel that I was kind of looking for.
Yeah, I felt like the plot a little bit drug a little bit in the middle. Like, when she's at her friend's place and the Skrull are there. And you're like, there's story development there. But it felt like it just kind of slowed down a little bit. Too much for me.
I feel like it was necessary, but at the same time, it could have been okay without it.
Yeah.
As long as we got that part of the story in another way.
All right, and then I'm going to kind of throw a surprise question to you guys that I didn't really mention before. What would you guys rate the movie out of 5 stars, using half stars as well? For me, I've already given this some thought, so I'll go ahead and go first. I'll kind of explain some pluses and some minuses of my own real fast. You guys don't have to do this, just I want the rating in general, but if you want to add something else, you can. For me, positives, Brie Larson as Captain Marvel really embodied the character. Not that I knew her from the comics. I hadn't really read much with her. I've only read like 1 or 2. But she embodied her in a way that I am comfortable seeing her in the MCU. I love Nick Fury as this younger version. The 90s throwback, it's nice to see a time period piece versus it has to be the next thing. I thought that was cool. And again, some of the throwbacks to the other MCU as a whole. The negatives, again, like I said, I felt like it kind of dragged in a couple places. But again, it was kind of necessary. Tough part is we all knew she was already a pilot. We kind of knew there was some sort of accident, some sort of explosion or what have you, before really going in the movie, so it took so long for her to find it, which we get, it's a story thing, but when the audience has to wait for her to catch up to the audience, you know what I mean? It can kind of slow things down. These are just a little bit gripes, nothing big. And then, like I said, just like the shield comet and like the Tesseract, I wish they would have explained it a little bit, but it kind of still fits, so I'm okay with it. So for me, I give it a 3.5 out of 5 stars. Good movie, definitely recommend to go see it. Yeah, I'd have to give it a 3.5. I'm also comparing this against the other starting movies of each MCU franchise. Iron Man 1, Captain America 1, Thor 1.
What if you wouldn't have compared it? What would you have given it?
Probably still a 3.5. I don't know, it's hard because now when you're watching these movies, you're watching it with the expectation of the MCU as a whole. You're not thinking of, oh, this is just a Captain Marvel movie. And that's the hard part, is to separate a franchise from the overall narrative. I'd give it 3.5. Nikki, what about you?
Probably like 4.5.
4.5?
Really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I'm with Nikki. I think 4.5 suits it. I mean, it was just... I mean, I get it. It's an action movie, so it's like guns, violence, blow up, you know? But it wasn't about that. It really had a developed backstory that... It made you feel realistic. It made you feel human watching it. And, like, watching her go through her life and watching her find herself. So I think, you know, it wasn't just a movie. It was her developing as a person. And I liked watching that on screen.
So you said about 4.5. What about you?
I completely agree at 4.5. I think that it wasn't just a superhero film. It was a human film.
Yeah. No, and I fully agree with that.
Well, I think that Nick Fury's character was amazing. I think that Brie Larson fits Captain Marvel perfectly. And I'm excited to see how her character develops more, even though we've already seen like how she's developed.
But yeah, now how she is Captain Marvel now, which I kind of wish that was something else. That, like, because Mercy and I both thought of this at the theater at different times, is the whole Marvel thing, you know, that's obviously got to be where she gets the name Captain Marvel, and they never called her Captain Marvel by name in any way, reference, or form.
I think we'll get that in Endgame.
Yeah, or maybe like Tony Stark will be like, all right, Captain, and then, you know, or something, you know, there might be some joke. I can't wait to see her be snarky with Tony, though.
And another thing is that I think it gave us exactly what we were looking for. Everyone kind of had an idea of, as soon as they pulled out that pager, and he paged them, and we were like, who's he paging? And everyone was like, oh, it's got to be Captain Marvel. It ties in. This movie's set in the 90s.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And just the way that they all clicked it together really made it one whole story, instead of, okay, here's a prequel and a sequel and a prequel that turns into the next set that goes into the next fit. You know, like, it's just...
Yeah. Yeah,
it tied everything together for me.
No, I think that's actually a really good point, because there's a lot of things that we would have complained about had they not done it, and we don't give them enough credit for, such as the pager thing. Like, obviously we were like, well, she has to give him a pager, he has to get the pager somehow, but they could very easily been like, oh, maybe he gets it in a sequel movie or whatever, if they decided to keep it in the 90s. That leads me to one last question before we tie this up. Do you guys want to see Captain Marvel 2 take place in the 90s or early 2000s, or, you know, somewhere in the past? Or do you want to see it present day, post Thanos?
Present day, post Thanos.
That's where I'm at too. About you two ladies?
Yeah.
I want to see one before. I want to see how she gets to that point and where she, kind of where she was leading up to it. Like, like Ashton and I were talking about, she was like, well, what happened to her friend? Do you think her friend's alive? And do you think that's going to tie in? And she doesn't necessarily have to be on Earth.
That's no, I mean, they even, you know, she like left to go help the Skrull, and that would be a setup point for movie 2.
She could have been anywhere, she could have been doing anything, so really finding out what she was doing leading up to that, I think I would like to see.
Well, I think absolutely. Both could be in the movie, though, as far as leading up to where she was, and then now,
like past
how
present.
She got that, yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I don't know, I kind of want to see post-Thanos, because I feel like they had to tell her origin story. so that way we'd understand who she is, how she got here, for Endgame. So then after Endgame, now we can jump into, we already know who she is, we've seen how she interacts with the universe, but if they keep telling past stories, I feel like they're going to be holding her back, versus having her jump ahead with the rest of the gang, like Winter Soldier and whoever else is going to be left after, you know, Phase 3. So
that's even if she survives Thanos.
She's going to... Dude, she is so powerful. And you know they got to beat him. Like, he's going to go down. And I don't think that they would say, we're going to create our first Marvel lead character and then kill her off in the very next movie.
Pull a Joss.
Three months later. Yeah, pull a Joss. So, I know. I was really surprised. I'm sure Marvel was like, yeah, you can't kill off that many Avengers. She's like, well, I want to kill off half of them. Can I kill off half of them? It's a good story. They're like, yeah, it's great. But no, we need money. So, all right. Well, I appreciate you ladies joining me for today. I'm really glad that we were able to schedule this and go see the movie together. I had a good time. Overall, I do highly recommend this movie for people. But I just want to say thank you again to everyone who's listening, who's made it this far. We'll see you guys next time.